Now, remember that this period of time that is described in the king's dream is called the times of the Gentiles. And there are certain phrases we ought to be very familiar with. And that one is one that we need to be familiar with, the times of the Gentile. We could call it also the age of man. In other words, it begins with Nebuchadnezzar. Actually, there were a couple of kingdoms before that. You had Egypt and you had Assyria. And they're mentioned in line with these kingdoms in some places in Scripture. But the kingdoms that really constitute the times of the Gentiles begin with Nebuchadnezzar and will end when Christ comes back physically to the earth at the second coming to set up his kingdom here upon the earth. That will be the end of man's day. No more will man have any rule, that is, man without God. No more will man without God have any rule or any say in the governments of this world. Isn't that going to be wonderful? Isn't it going to be wonderful whenever all the nations of the world are under the control of Christ and the principles of the kingdom are going to be taught, and the knowledge of the Lord shall cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Going to be a wonderful, glorious time when that takes place. It's just more than we can comprehend, really. But this is the times of the Gentiles. Now, we talked about the difference in that phrase and the fullness of the Gentiles, which has nothing to do with this period. Fullness of the Gentiles has to do with the period of the church age, and will end, of course, with the rapture of the church, and has to do with the calling out of the Gentiles, a people for his name. And when that is full, when that calling out is complete, when that the church is full, then that time of the fullness of the Gentiles will be finished and complete. We just want to make the distinction in those two. Now let's turn quickly to Revelation 17 tonight. I didn't get to do this the other night, and I want to read two or three verses here in Revelation 17, see if we can tie this back with what we were talking about last time, and it's also going to tie in with what we'll be into tonight. Verse 10, chapter 17, and there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and the others not yet come. Now, seven kings. This would go back, and this would be the ones that would also include, beginning with Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. Now, that would be the five that are fallen. One is, that would be Rome, the Roman. That would be the one at that particular time. And the others not yet come, and when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And we see more at another time. And the beast that was and is, not even he is the eighth, and is of the seventh, and goeth into perdition. Now, that beast, of course, is the Antichrist. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. And these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is the Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Now, that, of course, is describing the time when Christ comes back to the earth to destroy Antichrist and to set up his kingdom. So, this period here in Revelation ties in, as we're going to see, and adds to the account in Daniel that we are studying. and we may come back to that at another time as well. Now, let's turn to Daniel chapter 7 tonight, and let's read Daniel's vision and do a little comparing of these two chapters. Now, we'll come back to chapter 7 and study it more completely. Tonight, I want to more or less show you that Daniel's dream, or his vision, I keep calling it a dream, his king's dream, Daniel's vision, lines up with the king's dream, only it carries more depth to it and shows it in a different light. Daniel chapter 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream, told the sum of the matter. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea. In Scripture, sea refers to mankind. And so as the four winds strove upon the great sea, these four kingdoms are their influence and their power is upon mankind. Say, humanity of the world. And so that's the picture here. Now, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. Now, they came out of the nations of the world. They came out of the people. The sea, people. All right? The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Now, this, of course, the lion... It represents Nebuchadnezzar and the head of gold. So we'll come back and tie these all together a little closer. But then verse 5, and behold another beast, a second like to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. Now this is the second kingdom, and this is Medo-Persia. And it covers even more. See, Babylon covered a larger part of the world than Egypt or Assyria had ever covered. Now comes the second of these world empires on the scene. And he devours much flesh. In other words, he takes many nations and conquers many people and that sort of thing. Now, in verse 6, and I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now this would be, of course, Greece, and the wings represent the swiftness. The leopard's fast anyway, and then with four wings, this the speed with which Alexander conquered the world. And then he died young, and his kingdom was divided into four divisions, four heads you have here. We're going to see in Revelation, we saw, I believe it's in Revelation, one of the places we see two heads mentioned. There were only two of those four heads that ever had any influence. So the other two were rather dormant, but it was divided into four heads. And dominion was given unto it. In other words, dominion meaning that the great deal of land and territory and all the known world was given to it. Okay, that's the third one. Now, come to verse 7. This I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. Now get this. He takes a little time to talk about this when he says, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. Now, here is the first mention of a metal. You know, the other beasts were made, I mean, the image were four different kinds of metal. Ended up with iron, Rome. Well, here we have Rome. And it mentions the iron as teeth, iron teeth. Well, if you're going to have iron, and you're going to eat, and you're going to chew, and you're going to eat up the nations of the world, that's the best description I can think of, is iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Okay. It had 10 horns. Now we're back here to, remember the book of Revelation chapter 17? The last beast that is given there had 10 horns. And, of course, in Revelation, we go on further, and three of these horns are consumed. A little horn rises up and takes over three of the horns. And so this little horn, which is another type of Antichrist, word for Antichrist, rises up, and among the 10 horns, he takes charge of three of these kings and kingdoms, overthrows them, and takes their power. And unto himself, and then he is the ruler. He runs the rest of it. And that, of course, speaks of the times during Antichrist rule. But now notice here, then, that in both of these, Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Daniel's vision, you have four kings or kingdoms in both. In Nebuchadnezzar, the qualities are described by different metals. These are very important. Daniel saw different beasts, and the actions and qualities of these beasts describe the kings and their kingdoms. Now, folks, this is prophecy. This is history written in advance. Now, Daniel lived to see the first two of these kingdoms, and, of course, the third one, the Grecian kingdom under Alexander followed, and then the Romans, and that was during the time of Christ, when Christ came during that Roman time. And then, of course, as we talked about last week, there is a time in chapter 2, and we'll come back to that in just a minute, where we have the church age, and between the legs of that beast of iron and the feet and toes, that's part iron and part clay, there is the whole period of time, some 2,000 years now, of the church age that separate these two. And of course the feet are going to be crushed by that stone cut out of the mountain without hands. And whenever it crushes those feet, that image is heavy anyway. It's top heavy. Gold weighs more than silver, and silver weighs more than brass. Brass weighs, the lightest of all is iron. And iron and clay is even lighter still, so the beast doesn't have much stability. The whole idea of this beast is it's man's beast. It's man's day, and there's not much stability in man's day. Oh, he rules and he rants with his authority, see. Authority is the key here. I just wish we could stop and take the time to talk some more about that. But authority is the key here. And in this, of course, in this last kingdom, we have the authority of the iron, military authority, and you have the clay, which represents the people, represents democracy. It represents the will of the individual people. And so what you have is a confederacy of 10 nations that have great military might, but they really can't do very much because the peoples of these nations are insisting upon liberties and freedoms and such, and their nationalistic customs and all of the other things that go with what people want. And so the military might is destroyed and weakened by the democracy that we have today. And so we see all over the world these military powers, used to be great military powers, becoming military democracies. And the United States is the greatest promoter of that, of course, and has been for many, many years. I'll tell you, the United States looks to me like the great, although we have one thing you can say for it, we've been basically on the side of the Jew, yet that's about the only positive thing you can say for America. We have been the great promoter of the destruction of faith, the destruction of the scriptures, the destruction of authority, and the authority of parents, the authority of policemen, the authority of schools to discipline children, whatever. We have been, America has been the great one to help set up for the Antichrist. And so we push for these democracies that we call them all over the world, South America, over in the Orient, all over Eastern Europe. We're the great pushing promoter to get rid of all of this old authoritarian communism and all that stuff and get these democracies in here. Well, we have been set up the stage for Antichrist. You understand that. Now, the significance of the different metals, main thing that we need to recognize is that as we go down the image from gold to the iron and the clay, we're going from finer metals to the cheaper metals, and yet we're going from the softer, weaker metals to stronger metals. For iron is much stronger than gold and the silver and brass as far as its ability to destroy. You notice it talks about them stamping, you know, and using the teeth to chew and to devour. This is Rome. This was its power and this was its might. The nations. Death. I want to read, if you have your book with you, the Most High God, I'm going to read two or three pages here because he lays this out so well and so concise. Daniel began the interpretation of the dream by asserting the sovereignty of God, that is, of the king's dream. He asserted the sovereignty of God, the fact that he declared that it was God, the God of heaven, not the Babylonian gods, nor the king himself, who had made Nebuchadnezzar the top ruler of the then known world. It took courage for Daniel to speak this way to the king. The pressure would have been great to win the king's favor and to avoid statements that might be offensive. Daniel was determined, however, not to sacrifice the truth of God on the altar of expediency. Daniel called Jehovah the God of heaven, not just because heaven is God's special dwelling place. The Babylonians believed that their gods came from the earth. Daniel wanted to make it clear that his God was not one of the Babylonian gods, that his gods were higher than they were. It is important to note that in the interpretation, Daniel moved progressively from the top to the bottom of the image. This downward movement represented the passage of time. Thus, the upper parts of the image portrayed earlier history, the lower parts later history. When Daniel interpreted the head of gold, he said to Nebuchadnezzar, "You are the head of gold. And after you, there will arise another kingdom inferior to you." Thus, the head of gold represented both the Babylonian kingdom and its great king. Orientals regarded kings and their kingdoms as being synonymous with each other. Why did God represent Babylon with gold in the dream? It was an appropriate representation for two reasons. First, Marduk, the chief god of Babylon, was called the god of gold. Secondly, Babylon used gold extensively in its buildings, images, and shrines. Herodotus, who was at Babylon 90 years after the era of Nebuchadnezzar, was astonished at the amounts of gold there. Even walls and buildings were overlaid with gold. Babylon was to be succeeded by a second kingdom, represented by the images, breast, and arms of silver. This would be the kingdom of Medo-Persia. Two arms coming together to form one breast pictured this kingdom perfectly. Two distinct people, the Medes and the Persians, were united together in 550 BC under the same king to form one great power. Why was silver a fitting representation of the Medo-Persian kingdom? In ancient times, silver signified money, for silver was the standard of value and the medium of exchange. Medo-Persia became noted for basing its power on money, which was collected through an extensive tax system. Daniel stated that Medo-Persia would be inferior to Babylon. It was not inferior to Babylon in military strength, for it conquered Babylon. It was not inferior in size, for Medo-Persia was a much larger kingdom than Babylon. It was inferior in one respect. Being a partnership empire, it lacked the absolute unity that Babylon enjoyed. Talked about that earlier. Babylon's the only one of these kingdoms that had where the king was final, absolute, total authority. All right? Medo-Persia was to be succeeded by a third Gentile kingdom represented by the images belly and thighs of bronze. This would be the kingdom of Greece under Alexander the Great and his successors. One belly subdivided into two thighs was an excellent way for God to portray the Grecian kingdom ahead of time. After Alexander had unified his kingdom, he died at a young age. His kingdom was divided into four leading generals. However, only two of the divisions played an important role in history. These two divisions headquartered in Syria and Egypt. Why did God represent Greece with bronze? The Greeks developed this metal highly and used it extensively in their implements of war. Thus, their kingdom was characterized by bronze. Now, Daniel said that Greece would rule over all the earth, referring to the world then known to Daniel and his contemporaries. It is a fact that Alexander's kingdom ruled considerably more of the earth than did Babylon and Medo-Persia. This part of the prophetic dream was fulfilled when Greece conquered Persia in 331 BC. Greece was to be succeeded by a fourth Gentile kingdom represented by the images legs of iron, feet and toes of iron and clay. This would be the Roman Empire. God's portrayal of Rome with two legs was very apt, for the ancient Roman Empire ruled extensive areas of both the eastern and western parts of the world. In fact, in 364 AD, the Roman Empire was divided politically into two divisions, the Western Roman Empire with Rome as its capital and the Eastern Roman Empire with Constantinople as its capital. Iron was an excellent designation of Rome for at least two reasons. First, ancient Rome was noted for its use of iron in military weaponry. Second, as Daniel indicated in verse 40, just as iron is able to crush gold, silver, and bronze because it is stronger, so Rome would crush and shatter the ancient world. Ancient Rome did just that through its great military strength. This aspect of the prophetic dream was fulfilled when Rome conquered Greece in 146 BC. As noted earlier, Daniel's downward movement on the image represented the passage of time. Thus, when Daniel interpreted the last part of the image, the feet and the toes, he was dealing with the final form of Gentile world dominion in time. Since the feet and toes were part of the representation of the fourth or Roman kingdom, they portrayed the Roman Empire in its final stage of existence, in contrast with its earlier leg stage. The legs of the fourth kingdom consist of iron, but the feet and toes were a mixture of iron and clay. This distinction in substance also indicated that the Roman Empire would experience two distinct stages of existence, an earlier and a later stage. Daniel interpreted the iron and clay mixture as follows. Just as iron is strong, so the final stage of the Roman Empire would be strong militarily. Just as clay is characterized by brittleness, so the final stage of the Roman Empire would be characterized by division. Different groups of people would combine with one another to form the final stage of the empire, but they would not adhere completely to one another, just as iron and clay do not combine completely with each other. It would appear, then, that the final stage of the Roman Empire would consist of a confederation of several nations. These nations would combine forces for the sake of military strength, but they would not combine to the extent of losing their national identities and distinctives. Inasmuch as the image of the dream was human in form, it would have had 10 toes. This indicated that the final stage of the Roman Empire would consist of a 10-nation confederation. Indeed, Daniel 7:23-24 clearly states that the fourth or Roman kingdom would consist of 10 kings or kingdoms. Now, as noted earlier, the iron legs represented the ancient Roman Empire as it devoured massive areas of the world through brute military strength. But when was the later foot and toe stage to exist? Inasmuch as the Roman Empire never consisted of a 10-nation confederation in past history, one is forced to conclude that this final stage of the Roman existence must take place in the future. Sometime beyond the present, there will be a revival of the Roman Empire. The empire that died in 476 AD will be brought to life again in the form of a 10-nation confederation. Many are convinced that the common market of Europe will develop into this empire. It is a fact that political leaders of several European nations have met within recent years to discuss the formation of such a confederation. A confederation which will be united for military and economic strength, but will maintain the identities and distinctives of the member nation. Western leaders are thinking in that direction. Rome was to be succeeded by a fifth kingdom represented by the stone in the dream. This kingdom would be set up by the God of heaven, not by man. The characteristics of this kingdom of God would be as follows. First, it would never be destroyed. Now, this is the wonderful things about this final kingdom of Christ. It will never be destroyed. No other kingdom would ever succeed it. It would destroy and end all the Gentile kingdoms portrayed in the image of the dream. It would endure forever. These characteristics of God's kingdom would be a stark contrast with the characteristics of the Gentile kingdoms. I thought he said as concisely as could be said, the putting together the image and the qualities of the metal, what they stood for, and of course specifically and particularly what we're interested in. You see, all four of the kingdoms have existed except the final stage of the fourth one. The feet and the toes. That's all that's left for man. And that's where we are today. And that's what's happening in the world today. That's the reason Russia and communism have failed. That's the reason Eastern Europe is all awash and torn up. That's the reason that all of these things that are going on in the Middle East, where we're trying to get together to get the hostage thing settled, so we won't be having hostage problems in the way, so we'd have peace, so we can get Israel with its neighbors and start working on peace treaties. for the safety. That's all Israel's ever asked for, just a treaty of assurance that recognition is a nation and an assurance that their borders won't be crossed. That's all they've ever asked for. And they're working toward that thing right now. So, folks, anybody who doesn't believe the Bible today just doesn't know anything about the Bible and what it says. And the only way that can be, of course, is the person, individual themselves. They love sin. They love self. And they hate God. They don't want His control. They want to be a part of man's kingdom. You just go ahead. If that's what you want, to be a part of man's philosophy, man's ideology, man's thinking, well, you just go right ahead. But I'll tell you what, you're on the losing end of this thing, and it's not going to be long before the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, is going to establish His kingdom. Boy, we're going to see changes in this old world, and they're going to be glorious. Righteousness is going to rule and be in style. Truth, morality, and all of the other glorious traits. And man will bring glory to God. That's the wonderful thing. He will honor and glorify His Maker.